You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:59 a.m. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
Good morning. This is American Standoff, and we're a fairly new, over 6 months now, show on KBOO, and we examine the current political divide in America from an Indigenous perspective given by myself, Jacqueline Keeler. I'm a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And once again, we are talking about January 6th. We premiered this show on January 6th, 2022, 1 year after the attempted insurrection. I guess it was an insurrection in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021, when thousands of supporters of former President Trump gathered in D.C. and later stormed the Capitol contesting President Biden's election. And we have since also really examined the big lie, which is what really motivated them, was the idea that the election had been stolen from Trump. I also make the connection here to Oregon and how it impacts us here, and how many of these events have parallel events here in our own state, including the fact that our own capital in Salem was also stormed just 2 weeks before January 6, 2021. But today on American Standoff, we are discussing election workers, the big lie, and Trump's hollowing out of democracy. And I think it's very important to understand it in those terms, what's going on. This is a hollowing out of democracy. It's making democracy less functional. It's a direct attack on democracy, and I guess what you would call small d democracy, and what that portends for the future, right? Particularly with the next elections coming up, the election in the fall, but also in future elections like in 2024. So on Tuesday, and of course they're right now as we're broadcasting the show, the hearings are happening again, the January 6th Select Committee hearing, but we're going to look at what sort of somewhat was discussed on Tuesday, some of the testimony. And on Tuesday, Georgia election workers Wandrea Shea Moss and her mother Ruby Freeman delivered emotional testimony detailing how a mob of Donald Trump supporters came after them, following the 2020 presidential election. This was after then-President Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani spread lies about them taking part in a voter fraud scheme, right? These false allegations led to death threats and harassment, okay, for both of these women and including, as we will detail, other members of their family. And not just them, this is happening to election workers across the country. And this sort of act of, it has a suppressive effect where people don't want to run for office. They don't want to be subjected to this level of harassment, and that in the social media age, it can become quite intrusive and really dangerous to your entire family. And so by sort of forcing people out of people who are not part of the scheme of the Trump followers trying to take over our government, they are basically sort of creating a situation where they have more and more, room to move, to maneuver. And they are working very hard to elect and to put into positions of power people who do believe in the big lie. And so this is an issue that is not going away. This is actually growing. It's metastasizing in our country, and it's something we really need to take very seriously and really stay on top of what's going on and what it means and what we can do about it, because I do believe there are things we can do about it. So we can expect more of this in 2022. And what does this mean for American democracy? So today on American Standoff, we will examine why this is a threat to democracy and civil society as we know it. And I've been bringing up that term civil society a lot, and I really think that we need to acquaint ourselves with it more, because it's a concept that is understood, particularly in Central and South America, in the Global South, as far as when civil society falls. What happens to, you know, our expectations about, you know, the orderly nature of our lives, our future, our planning. You know, this matters in every aspect of our daily existence. So democracy matters. So that's something to keep in mind. On the show, as I say every episode, on American Standoff, we examine the connections between seemingly disparate events like this and their origins in white supremacy and the DNA of colonialism and the ongoing occupation of indigenous homelands in the United States. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, once again, and I am your host. This is a call-in show, so please do call in. The number in the studio is 503-231-8187. So today we are discussing the testimony of a mother and daughter, Wandrea Shea Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman. They were, Shea works as a Georgia election worker, but her and her mother were also volunteers who worked in the precincts, the polling places that are helped with the counting of the ballots. And so they were slandered by Trump and Giuliani. While they were simply doing, particularly for Ruby Freeman, the mother, volunteer work to help with the functioning of our democratic process. They were faced with Trump denouncing them and basically singing his army of MAGA supporters on them. And I should say that Shea and Ruby and her mother are Black women, and they are part of the volunteer, and also they're part of the folks who make democracy work, right? So they were faced with these MAGA people doxing them, coming after them, and not only them, but this vicious campaign of intimidation is being conducted on election workers all over the country. And in fact, in her testimony, Shea Moss, she gave up her job as an election worker, and in fact, almost everyone in her who she worked with also left their positions. And so we're losing a lot of experienced people, and who are they going to be replaced with, right? And so and this has happened over and over again with the Trump administration, really pushing out skilled workers, particularly people who are very familiar with how government works, nonpartisan people who are just doing their job, pushing them out. And so it's really, really, once again, I think the term is hollowing out of our democracy, of our government, of the structure of what makes things work in this country. And by losing these talented and skilled people. So they were, after, the experience, the unleashing of a horde of the Trump big lie army that invaded their very homes and every aspect of their lives, they are today, they testified, afraid to even say their names in public. They're afraid to be overheard in the grocery store speaking to, they won't even shop together because they don't want to accidentally say each other's name to one another and then become targeted, right? I think, that Trump should be the one who should be afraid to say his name in public. Of course, his name, Trump, is what he's licensed and to a large extent made his wealth off of, right? So very bravely on Tuesday, Shea Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman, gave very harrowing testimony on on Tuesday's House Select Committee hearing into the January 6, 2021 insurrection. So these election workers poignantly explained how their lives were upended by Trump and Rudy Giuliani's ludicrous claims that they were election fraud hustlers. So let's listen to audio of Ruby Freeman, of the grand of her mother, describing how it felt to be targeted by Trump.
I now welcome our final witness this afternoon. Andrea Shea Moss. Ms. Moss worked in the Department of Registration and Elections in Fulton County, Georgia from 2017 until 2022. In that job, Ms. Moss handled voter applications and absentee ballot requests and also helped to process the vote count for several elections. In December 2020, Ms. Moss and her mother, Ms. Ruby Freeman, became the target of nasty lies spread by President Trump and his allies as they sought to overturn the election results in Georgia. Ms. Moss and her mother, Ms. Freeman, are two of the unsung heroes in this country, doing the hard work of keeping our democracy functioning for every American. Ms. Moss, welcome. Thank you for your service. And I thank you for being here today. I will now swear in.
Ty, could you? I actually sent you the wrong video there, so we'll stop that for now. I'm so sorry. I meant to have video of Lady Ruby, Ruby Freeman, Shea Moss's mother, giving testimony about how she lost her name and her sense of security. But I sent the wrong audio clip there, so I apologize for that. So this morning, I just want to say good morning again. This is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show, so please do call into the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. The number here is 503-231-8187, and my name is Jacqueline Keeler. I'm your host. I'd like to introduce myself at the top of every episode in my own language. My name is Jacqueline Keeler. In the Navajo way, we introduce ourselves to our clans. My clan is Kia'ani Nishle, and I am born for the Dakota people, the Honktowan Dakota people, the Yankunsut people. And so, and I am also a citizen of the Navajo Nation. I'd also like to acknowledge what we now call Portland, Oregon, is located on the land of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kathmamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz, Spams, Chinook, Tualatin, Kaiapuya, Malala, and many other tribes. I always ask this question at this time as well, and something I would like my listeners to think about, which is, what did we learn in the year that's passed since January 6, 2021? And with these hearings, live broadcast hearings, which have been going on all month and will continue now, we're hearing into July, we are learning a lot. And a lot of important information is being documented. And whether or not it will actually actually have some criminal prosecution attached to it, we will see, particularly for Trump. And we opened discussion of the testimony given in Tuesday's January 6th hearings of Georgia election workers Wandrea Shea Moss and her mother Ruby Freeman, detailing how a mob of Donald Trump supporters came after them following the 2020 presidential election. So we were going to hear Freeman say in her previously recorded video testimony that there is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States target you. So it was really quite heart-wrenching to hear her mother's testimony. She's a small businesswoman. She runs her own business. She's well known. She also, like Trump, has her name is known. She sells T-shirts that say Lady Ruby on them. She's someone who she sells clothing, and so she markets and designs her own clothing, and now he's taken that from her by turning her name into something that is been being attacked and completely her entire life has been upended by this assault, and it is a form of assault, I would say. And And so, and her daughter Shay Moss also gave live testimony on Tuesday, and she looked very distressed and very nervous. She told the committee in person that Trump's targeting of her and the racist threats that followed turned her life, completely upended it. And so she says in her testimony, "I don't want anyone knowing my name. It's affected my life in a major way, in every way, all because of lies," she said, noting how she once delighted in helping others vote, a right once denied to Black Americans like her grandmother, and which is still being imperiled by Trump and his henchmen. So let's listen to Georgia election worker Shay Moss's testimony now.
Today are incredibly difficult to relive. Your proud service as an election worker took a dramatic turn on the day that Rudy Giuliani publicized a video of you and your mother counting ballots on election night. President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, and others claimed on the basis of this video that you and your mother were somehow involved in a plot to kick out observers, bring suitcases of false ballots for Biden into the arena, and then run them through the machines multiple times. None of that was true, was it?
None of it.
I'd like to show you some of the statements that Rudy Giuliani made in a second hearing before the Georgia state legislators, a week after that video clip from State Farm Arena was first circulated by Mr. Giuliani and President Trump. I want to advise viewers that these statements are completely false and also deeply disturbing.
Tape earlier in the day of Ruby Freeman and Shay Freeman Moss and one other gentleman quite obviously surreptitiously passing around USB ports as if they are vials of heroin or cocaine. I mean, it's obvious to anyone who's a criminal investigator or prosecutor they are engaged in surreptitious illegal activity again that day. And that's a week ago, and they're still walking around Georgia lying. They should have been questioned already. Their places of work, their homes should have been searched for evidence of ballots, for evidence of USB ports, for evidence of voter fraud.
That video was from Rudy Giuliani's appearance at a Georgia state Senate hearing on December 10. How did you first become aware that Rudy Giuliani, President's lawyer, was accusing you and your mother of a crime?
I was at work, like always, and the former chief, Mr. Jones, asked me to come to his office. And when I went to his office, the former director, Mr. Barron, was in there. And they showed me a video on their computer. It was just like a very short clip of us working at State Farm, and it had someone on the video like talking over the video, just saying that we were doing things that we weren't supposed to do, just lying throughout the video. And that's when I first found out about it. I told them, I was like, where have they, where have you been getting these threats? I don't believe I have any. And Mr. Jones told me, like, they're attacking his Facebook. And I don't really use Facebook. I have one. So I went to the Facebook app, and I'm just kind of panicky at this point because this has never happened to me, and my mom is involved, and I'm like her only child. So I'm just asking him, like, well, where are the messages? All I see is the feeds. Like, how do you get to the messages? And he said, it's another icon on your phone that says Messenger. And I went to that icon, and it was just a lot of horrible things there.
And those horrible things, did they include threats?
Yes, a lot of threats, wishing death upon me, telling me that, you know, I'll be in jail with my mother, and saying things like, be glad it's 2020 and not 1920. That's, yeah.
Were a lot of these threats and vile comments racist in nature?
A lot of them were racist. A lot of them were just hateful. But yes, sir.
In one of the videos we just watched, Mr. Giuliani accused you and your mother of passing some sort of USB drive to each other. What was your mom actually handing you on that video?
A ginger mint.
My name is Ruby Freeman. I've always believed that when God says that he'll make your name great, but this is not the way it was supposed to be. I could have never imagined the events that followed the presidential election 2020. For my entire professional life, I was Lady Ruby. My community in Georgia, where I was born and lived my whole life, knew me as Lady Ruby. I built my own business around that name, LaRuby's Unique Treasures, a pop-up shop catering to ladies with unique fashions. I wore a shirt that proudly proclaimed that I was, and I am, Lady Ruby. Actually, I had that shirt on. I had that shirt in every color. I wore that shirt on Election Day 2020. I haven't worn it since, and I'll never wear it again. Now I won't even introduce myself by my name anymore. I get nervous when I bump into someone I know in the grocery store who says my name. I'm worried about who's listening. I get nervous when I have to give my name for food orders. I'm always concerned of who's around me. I've lost my name, and I've lost my reputation. I've lost my sense of security, all because a group of people, starting with number 45 and his ally, Rudy Giuliani, decided to scapegoat me and my daughter, Shay, to push their own lies about how the presidential election was stolen.
Ms. Moss, how has this experience of being targeted by the former president and his allies affected your life?
It's turned my life upside down. I no longer give out my business card. I don't transfer calls. I don't want anyone knowing my name. I don't want to go anywhere with my mom because she might yell my name out over the grocery aisle or something. I don't go to the grocery store at all. I haven't been anywhere at all. I've gained about 60 pounds. I just don't do nothing anymore. I don't want to go anywhere. I second guess everything that I do. It's affecting my life in a major way. In every way, all because of lies. For me doing my job, same thing I've been doing forever.
Okay, I think that's the end of the audio there. But there you heard the testimony given by mother and daughter, Shay Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman, who were Georgia election workers slandered by Trump and subjected to a vicious campaign of intimidation, both of their families. And so there is also, I mentioned, audio of even more shocking audio of how her grandmother was targeted and actually had her home invaded by a mob of Trump Big Y supporters. Let's listen to that audio now.
I received
received a call from my grandmother. This woman is my everything. I've never even heard her or seen her cry ever in my life. And she called me screaming at the top of her lungs, like, Shay, Shay, oh my God, Shay, just freaking me out, saying that there are people at her home and they, you know, they knocked on the door, and of course she opened it and seeing who was there, who it was, and they just started pushing their way through, claiming that they were coming in to make a citizen's arrest. They needed to find me and my mom. They knew we were there, and she was just screaming and didn't know what to do, and I wasn't there, so, you know, I just felt so helpless and so horrible for her, and she was just screaming. I told her to close the door. Don't open the door for anyone. And, you know, she's a 70-something, I won't say, year-old woman, and she doesn't like having restrictions. She wants to answer the door. She likes to get her steps in, walking around the neighborhood, and I had to tell her, like, you can't do that. You have to be safe, you know. She would tell me that at night people would just continuously send pizzas over and over to her home, you know, and they were expecting her to pay for these large amounts of pizzas, and she went through a lot that she didn't have to. And once again, it made me just feel so horrible.
In addition to the personal impact this experience has had on you and your family, one of the things that I find most disturbing is how these lies discourage longtime election workers from continuing to do this important work. Tell us, if you would, of the other election workers shown in that State Farm Arena video and their supervisors. How many are still election workers in Fulton County?
There is no permanent election worker or supervisor in that video that's still there.
And did you end up leaving your position as well?
Yes, I left.
Ms. Moss, I want to thank you for coming to speak with us and to thank you for your service to our democracy. What we have just played is a truly horrible and appalling sample, but just a sample of the things that were said about you and your mother following the election. I want to say how very sorry I think we all are for what you've gone through, and tragically, you're not alone. Other election workers around the country have also been the subject of lies and threats. No election worker should be subject to such heinous treatment just for doing their job.
So there you heard Senator Schiff, Representative Schiff, sorry, of California, speaking to Georgia election worker and Shay Moss, and her testimony regarding how her grandmother's home was invaded by Trump supporters. And so the violence is real. The violence and the threat to their family members, you know, and she pointed out that no one who was in that video with her, even her former supervisors, still work there. There's no more permanent staff, election staff there. And so once again, the description of the hollowing out of our democracy is very real, and so it's just I think that we all need to take a very, you know, really watch our elections, really you know, take part in them, and not allow this sort of bullying behavior to drive Americans out of the election process of which their ancestors, as Shay Moss mentioned, her grandmother's generation fought to have a right to be a part of, to be voters, and so to have her home invaded by Trump supporters, her grandmother's home, is I just found that moment in the hearing absolutely shocking, in the way in which it has basically driven both of these women and I imagine other members and her grandmother out of public life, even just their regular life, and fearing for just to do the things that they have every right to do as Americans. They have done nothing wrong. They don't deserve this. And the way in which Trump and his supporters do this stuff with this belligerent behavior with complete, with no sense that it's wrong. And this is very dangerous. I don't think I need to say that twice. Once again, this is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show, so please do feel free to call in. How do you feel about the state of our election system, of our democracy, when you hear testimony like this and what's happening? The number here, if you want to be part of this conversation, is 503-231-8187, and I'm Jacqueline Heeler, your host. So, testimony was also given on Tuesday by Rusty Bowers, the GOP Speaker of the Arizona State House, who said that that Giuliani and Trump both contacted him and asked him to overturn the election results without any evidence of election fraud, and which would be contrary, he notes, to the oaths he swore to the Constitution and the rule of law. He is quoted as saying, "It's foreign to my very being. I will not do it." He was actually a supporter of the ex-president and voted for him in the 2020 election, but he still refused. He chose to honor the will of Arizona voters, who did deliver the state to Joe Biden, and his oath to uphold the Constitution. It's interesting, I, as I mentioned, I'm a citizen of the Navajo Nation, and a large part of the Navajo Nation is in Arizona and occupies about three counties in Arizona, and those are three blue counties in a state that's usually viewed as red, becoming more purple. But I did a whole series of articles during the 2018 elections about how those counties, how they deliver the vote. They're sort of decisive counties, those Navajo counties, which are heavily Democratic, and I would say about 80% of Navajos vote Democratic, and for the Democrat Party, they helped deliver these Senate seats, both of the Senate seats. I know that we're not happy with Senator Sinema right now, but she had a deficit of about 35,000 votes, and certainly the Navajo Nation, which provided, I think, well over 80,000 votes for her, they helped tip the scale to help put Democrats in the Senate from the state of Arizona. So a lot of what you're seeing, and I really follow Arizona very closely, and I do coverage on the ground. I travel and interview folks and do reporting on the ground. And I will again in the 2022 election, turning out the vote for Navajo voters. I did a whole very long investigative piece on this for Sierra Magazine, and it's the power of the Navajo vote and many other Native nations. Arizona has a lot of reservations. It has one of the highest, largest populations of Native people in the country. And so the ability for Native people to exert their vote, and they are largely Democratic voters, is a threat to Republicans who have controlled the state since the Goldwater era. And so we just saw the ways in which there's an attempt to try to overturn the will of the people, and many of these people are Native people, right? And to ignore their votes, so anyway, that's something from my perspective as a reporter on the ground. I am looking at this very carefully, and we'll do more substantive reporting about this starting towards the end of the summer. So it was very interesting to hear Bowers, who is himself a Mormon, and there is a very large Mormon population in Arizona, and they have a lot of influence. And I think another Mormon Republican senator was basically driven from office. What is his name? Senator Flake, I think. Another witness was Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and Gabriel Sterling, a top Arizona elections official. They testified to Georgia elections official, testified to the pressure they were subjected to by Trump. And, Raffensperger, you know, he refused to overturn the will of the people there. And actually, Trump did run candidates against him in the primary recently, and against the governor, who also refused, both Republicans. And so they won their primaries. So Trump was unable to influence the process there. But he has been running candidates across the country with money, with a PAC, which apparently, as we've heard in the hearings, these hearings, that hundreds of millions, maybe $250 million, came from raising money off of the big lie that he had lost the election. So that he's using this sort of chest of money he has, in some cases, to pay himself. He paid his Trump hotels, like $250,000. But also to dole out money and patronage to candidates who will support the big lie. So he is still an active player, and people are watching these primaries very closely to see how much influence he will have. But he's continuing to put this sort of pressure, this sort of mobster type pressure on our democratic system nationally and every level, in fact. And so but it's quite concerning and worrying. But it was really kind of a bright light to see these people who stood up, and who, if they had not stood up, we would be in a very different situation right now if they had caved and given the electors to overturn the will of the voters in the case of their vote for Biden. We have many Republicans and who are ignoring Trump's behavior. I mean, most Republicans have refused to be. There's only two Republicans on this committee because the two Republicans who are on the committee have basically been removed from the party. They're not running. I think that Cheney is running again, Liz Cheney of Wyoming, but her career is pretty much dead now because of her participation. So this is seeing these facts presented. The good thing about not having a lot of the way the hearings have been conducted have been very constructive, very factual. There isn't a lot of normal sort of back and forth you hear in these sort of congressional hearings where one group will be trying to undermine what's going on, which would happen if you had certain Republicans on the committee. So we're able to hear the story of what happened in just a very completely very effective way it's being presented. The hearing also featured extended clips from Trump's hour-long call to Raffensperger on January 2021, where he piled pressure on the Secretary of State to sign more votes to overturn his loss to Biden in the state. So even though we've heard a lot of these things before, it's still pretty shocking to hear how they're a desperate and completely lawless, I guess you could say, or illogical president trying to steal the election. You can hear the tape, so it's been very interesting. But the question, it does, as much as it's great to see these people who stood up to him, the scary thing is that the way things are happening now, Trump may be able to put in place people all over the country who are complete true believers in the big lie, and in which case we will have a very different outcome if this were to happen again, right? And it's very scary to contemplate. This sort of atmosphere intimidation is driving election workers from their jobs. As we heard Moss, she left her job as an election worker, and most of the people she had worked with have also done so. So this not only poses a grave concern over Georgia's capacity, the state of Georgia's capacity to run elections for governor and for the Senate this November, but it also is an opening for political hacks who support Trump, right, of Trump allies. and to basically install themselves in this apparatus and to be able to administer elections in his favor in the state and local posts, and with no previous experience. We've lost the experienced professionals, and now we're going to get in the hacks, right? And so anyway, this makes elections easier to steal, and democracy will suffer, and once again, the disruption of hollowing out of democracy, of our democratic process. This is what these hearings are documenting. And so let's listen. So another thing that was brought up and it looks like we're running short on time, and so I will get to some of the stuff a little more quickly. Let's listen to a sampling of fake electors. So there was a lot of testimony given about fake electors before the January 6th committee on Tuesday, this whole plot to basically install fake electors, which I would actually like to probably talk more about how it's playing out today. And but it's pretty shocking to see so let's play this sampling of testimony.
No evidence being presented of any strength. Evidence can be hearsay evidence. It's still evidence, but it's still hearsay. But strong judicial quality evidence, anything that would say to me, you have a doubt, deny your oath, I will not do that. And on more than one occasion throughout all this, that has been brought up. And it is a tenet of my faith that the Constitution is divinely inspired of my most basic foundational beliefs. And so for me to do that because somebody just asked me to is foreign to my very being. I will not do it.
To be clear, did you hear the White House Counsel's Office say that this plan to have alternate electors meet and cast votes for Donald Trump in states that he had lost was not legally sound?
Yes, sir.
And who was present for that meeting that you remember?
It was in our office. It was Mr. Meadows, Mr. Giuliani, and a few of Mr. Giuliani's associates.
We're just, kind of useful idiots or rubes at that point. A strong part of me really feels that it's just kind of as the road continued and as that was failure, that got formulated as what do we have on the table. Let's just do it.
Secretary Raffensperger, did Joe Biden win the 2020 presidential election in Georgia, and by what margin?
President Biden carried the state of Georgia by approximately 12,000 votes.
What was it like to compete with a president who had the biggest bully pulpit in the world to push out these false claims?
For lack of a better word, it was frustrating. But oftentimes I felt our information was getting out, but that there was a reticence of people who needed to believe it, because the president of the United States, who many looked up to and respected, was telling them it wasn't true.
Why didn't you just quit and walk away?
Because I knew that we had followed the law and we had followed the Constitution. And I think sometimes moments require you to stand up and just take the shots. You're doing your job. And that's all we did.
Okay, so that is a sampling of some of the, I was going to play a longer one, but I think we're running out of time. It's 10:43. So, I was going to also play a more detailed breakdown of the fake electors testimony, but basically on Tuesday, Representative Adam Schiff reminded listeners that every 4 years, Americans do not cast their votes directly for presidential candidates, but for electors pledged to those candidates to the Electoral College. So in December, electors in each state meet, cast their votes, and send these votes to Congress, right? So which meets in January to count those votes, and then the winner becomes president. So this is the process that they were basically trying to disrupt, right? Senator Schiff spent several minutes detailing how former President Trump and his campaign were, quote, directly involved in advancing and coordinating the plot to replace Biden electors with fake electors not chosen by the voters. Okay. So he says that the plot entailed convincing fake electors to cast and submit votes through fake certificates that they said would only be used in the event that Trump won his legal challenges. But they continue to, I guess, to try to get the court, even after the courts had rejected these lawsuits. So these were rejected, but they were still trying to push them. And even Trump's own lawyers doubted the legal basis of the plan, and some walked away rather than participate. So they played video of Casey Lucier. She was an investigative counsel for the Select Committee, who outlined the details of that plan. And she said the committee heard testimony that people close to Trump hatched a plan to organize fake electors for Trump in states that he lost in the weeks after the election. And so clips with testimony from former Trump staffers who were involved in or knew of the plot, lawyers who warned against it, and Republican Party officials. So they also detail the lengths the Trump campaign and fake electors took to carry out the scheme. So Lucier said one group of fake electors even considered, and you probably have seen some coverage of this, hiding overnight to ensure that they could access the state capitol in Michigan. So, the details on this is pretty crazy. Once again, I'd like to encourage you to call in if you have any sorts of opinions on this, of the fake electors thing. They actually created fake sort of documents and signed them. The number here is 503-231-8187. And this is not stopping here either. The House Select Committee for January 6th have actually subpoenaed more, and working with the FBI, and including video that they found of 11 Arizona Republicans falsely declaring themselves the state's presidential electors. And I have audio actually from their from the Republican fake electors in Arizona. They actually tweeted this out. It's from the official, the Republicans of Arizona's official Twitter account. And this video is still up, and I have actually retweeted it if you want to see it. Let's listen to the audio of that really fast.
Advancing and coordinating the plot to replace legitimate Biden electors with fake electors not chosen by the voters. You'll hear how this campaign convinced these fake electors to cast and submit their votes through fake certificates, telling them that their votes would only be used in the event that President Trump won his legal challenges. Yet when the president lost those legal challenges, when courts rejected them as frivolous and without merit, the fake elector scheme continued. At this point, President Trump's own lawyers, so-called Team Normal, walked away rather than participate in the plan. And his own White House counsel's office said that the plan was not legally sound. Let's play the following video produced by the Select Committee.
My name is Casey Lucier. I'm an investigative counsel for the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. On November 18th, a lawyer working with the Trump campaign named Kenneth Cheesebro wrote a memo arguing that the Trump campaign should organize its own electors in the
states. I need the next audio, the audio of the Republican fake electors in Arizona. We want to
it's coming.
They are okay, great. So we're going to be playing audio of Republican fake electors in Arizona signing documents from their own, and this was posted on their own Twitter account, of fake elector documents. It's very quiet.
From the state of Arizona, do hereby certify the following: A, that we convene
Okay, that's, I think that's maybe a little too quiet. I can barely hear it.
That's as loud as I can get it.
Yeah, okay, so we'll skip that one then. Yeah, sorry about that. That audio is very quiet, but you can see the video posted on there. It's actually on my Twitter account, too. I just reshared it. But it's actually of fake electors, Republican fake electors for Trump in Arizona signing documents that they were going to submit, trying to pretend like that was the actual electors' documents. And they actually still have this posted to their Twitter account. And right now, a Trump campaign official has been subpoenaed by the FBI to appear before, because he was at that meeting of fake Arizona electors. There were about 11 Arizona Republicans falsely declaring themselves the state's presidential electors, and they were subpoenaed yesterday by the Department of Justice. This was reported by the Washington Post. And a man named Thomas Lane, he's seen in the video, posted by the Arizona Republican Party in December 2020, passing out pieces of paper during the meeting where the Republicans signed documents certifying themselves as Arizona's duly elected and qualified electors. So they were. So in the video, the man is seen wearing a zipper jacket with Trump's campaign logo on the right sleeve. The jacket, as seen on the video, had Lane's last name on it. He certainly had labeled himself there. Lane's apparent presence in the video was reported by the Washington Post yesterday. And federal agents subpoenaed Lane and three other Republicans associated with a scheme to create alternate sets of Republican electors and send those documents to Congress. And the FBI investigations were part of the agency's look into the causes of the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol. And so fake electors were designed to sow confusion. This was a memo that was published by Trump and the elect by the administration. His administration. The electors were part of a multifaceted, complex scheme to upend the 2020 presidential election. The fake set of electors had no legal weight, and they were not certified by any state official. So the memo was written by attorney John Eastman, and this is. I haven't mentioned him before. He's a very interesting character. He's the one who basically came up with this whole idea to steal the election. And part of the goal is to sow confusion so people wouldn't know who the actual electors were. I don't know. It seems a little silly. But 7 states, including Arizona, were sent similarly worded paperwork. And they sent this fake paperwork to the National Archives and to the U.S. Senate. And so, and as I mentioned, the video of them committing this crime is still up on the Arizona Republican Twitter account. They're still sharing the video, and last I checked. So another one I wanted to show was an audio I wanted to play was of, from I was going to talk a bit about Senator Ron Johnson, the Wisconsin Republican senator who's been denying involvement in the fake elector scheme. But I'm going to skip that one because of time. And we're going to look at Otero County, New Mexico, which I mentioned in the last episode, where the county commissioners initially refused to certify the recent election they had there, but have now have since, with a threat of a New Mexico courts, they have done so. They have now certified it. But this is to show the extent to which this is becoming more and more. I was also going to share audio. Actually, I mentioned this of Michigan fake electors. Michigan was another state that did this, and trying to crash certification of the Michigan electors to cast their votes for Trump by entering through a side door, but the police prevented them from doing this. And this is very interesting audio. Can we play that audio, Ty, of the Michigan fake electors?
Okay.
I guess I can't hear that one either. So, well, I will maybe I will retweet that as well. But it just shows to me. I thought both of these were very interesting to see them at work with create with.
I got it. It's coming. It's on.
Okay.
political debate. Okay. It's the official sealed document. Okay. The certificate of ascertainment has also the GOP electors. They are here. They're okay. Trying to do their constitutional duty.
I understand.
And their constitutional duty requires them to be at the Senate chamber today at 2 p.m. Yeah. Okay. They're here.
I understand they're not being permitted in. If you have a problem, you can contact the governor's office, the Speaker of the House,
So that was, it was also very quiet, but these were Republicans trying to deliver their own fake electoral votes to the Capitol in Michigan, Lansing, Michigan. And this was in December 2020. And they were outside the Electoral College proceedings, and they were a group of Trump-supporting Republicans who were fake electors. They were denied access by law enforcement after falsely arguing that they were the GOP electors, and you can hear them using terminology like constitutional duty to be at the Capitol. And so I just thought this was very interesting, because when I cover right-wing extremists, one of the things I noticed is that, and they're mostly white, is that they have an incredible sense of entitlement, and this idea that I think that there is this the America they're fighting for isn't the America that we know, right? They're fighting, many of them are fighting for white nationalist homeland, right? It was a terrific idea, a completely racist idea. But they have an incredible entitlement to the processes of our government. They think that they own them. And they think that whatever they do is right. And I just think that the way it shows them presenting themselves and the way they're doing it, they feel completely entitled, right? And this is sort of another aspect of our the history of white supremacy in this country, where white Americans believe that whatever they do is in the best interests of this country, and even if what they're doing is patently illegal. I've mentioned before on the show, I have my own take on the Revolutionary War. Well, not my own take. It is an accepted historical take of the Revolutionary War, which I go through in some detail in my book, Standoff. But, there's this notion that what they're doing is in the same sort of vein as the founding fathers of the Revolutionary War. That even though they're doing things that are, violent or criminal, it's okay because they're doing it for liberty, right? The same language, the way in which that language is being repurposed in this, and how it lends itself to this sort of thing. And so so that's why I wanted to play that audio, to look at how is this going to play out. And I did want to go a little bit more deeper into sort of how the fake electors plot was conducted. But I think that you can see that it is going to continue into the next elections. And then, I think it's to see it happening. I mean, there's a lot more things I wanted to go through as well, which is that the you have Otero County, which after pressure from New Mexico state leaders and the New Mexico Supreme Court, Otero County commissioners voted 2-1 to certify the results of the 2022 primary election. And the audio I wanted to play was of one of the Otero County commissioners who actually was not there present, because he had actually been he was sentenced to jail Otero County Commissioner Coy Griffin, he refused to vote to certify, and he is right now, he was at the January 6, 2021 insurrection in the U.S. Capitol, and was not there to vote. He was, because he was being sentenced in federal court to 14 days in jail and a fine of $3,000 for his role in the January 6, 2021 insurrection. So there you have in which these folks who were at the insurrection are in public office. They are focused, laser focused on how our elections function, and basically throwing sort of a spanner into the works, trying to stop that process from happening. And so so this is something I just wanted to focus on a bit today and encourage my listeners to really, you know, become part of the electoral process, volunteer at the polls, do these things to make sure, you know, don't give in, don't give up. I think it's and really work to protect our election workers from this sort of what's happened to, as we mentioned earlier, to the mother and daughter who Shay Moss and her mother Ruby Freeman, and we cannot allow this to continue and stand up for them and help them deal with this kind of Trump has his mob, right? We need to be aware of it. We need to actually stand up against it, actively stand up against it, and defend people like Shay Moss and her mother Ruby Freeman. And so that's all. Thank you very much. This is Jacqueline Keeler and American Standoff.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m.